Christmas on LBC, Trump's first year with Simon Marks.
Welcome back to our review of an amazing year in Washington, and it's been a year that began with Donald Trump vowing to overturn much of Barack Obama's legacy. But in some key areas, he could not make very much progress. Even though his Republican Party controlled majorities in the House of Representatives and the Senate, he couldn't corral enough support to overturn Obamacare, a central plank of his election campaign, or secure funding to build that wall along the Mexican border. And this would prove to be a year in which US ties with Britain would be tested as never before.
The whole of the United States, as you can imagine, absolutely appalled by the scenes that everybody here is witnessing from Manchester, America.
The attack on an Ariana Grande concert at Manchester Arena brought fresh strains in the special relationship between the White House and Downing Street after US law enforcement leaked information about the investigation just hours after the attack.
We have heard, not officially from the US government, but from law enforcement sources who are briefing reporters, particularly in New York, that this was a terrorist assault using nail bombs.
So enraged were British authorities that for a while, intelligence sharing between the US and the UK ended, and the Prime Minister demanded assurances from President Trump that there would be no repetition. President Trump on the international stage spent much of the year causing a whole series of strains by implementing a foreign policy that he defines as America first.
We don't want other leaders and other countries laughing at us anymore, and they won't be.
In June, America became the first country to pull out of the Paris Climate Change Accords.
I was elected to represent the citizens of Pittsburgh. Not Paris.
The US joined only Syria and Nicaragua in not being part of that international agreement, and later in the year, the Syrians signed up for it. Towards the end of the year, another big break with the global community.
It is time to officially recognize Jerusalem as the capital of Israel. This is nothing more or less than a recognition of reality.
He insists the move doesn't undercut efforts at establishing a two-state solution in the Middle East, but no other country followed suit, and even long-standing US allies in the region, including Saudi Arabia and Jordan, urged the president not to do it. Earlier in the year,
we had the most beautiful piece of chocolate cake that you've ever seen, and President Xi was enjoying it.
President Trump broke the news of an American missile strike on Syria to China's President Xi Jinping, with whom he was dining at his Florida golf resort.
And I said, Mr. President, let me explain something to you. This is during dessert. We've just fired 59 missiles.
But that effort did not herald any kind of ongoing military attempt to oust President Bashar al-Assad in Damascus. And backed by his Russian sponsors, he's spending another new year still in power. On North Korea, though, a different approach.
North Korea best not make any more threats to the United States. They will be met with fire and fury like the world has never seen.
The president said the US military was locked and loaded, ready to go to war with Kim Jong-un, the North Korean strongman who received a new moniker from President Trump at the United Nations.
Rocket Man is on a suicide mission for himself and for his regime. The United States is ready, willing and able.
U.S. Secretary of State Rex Tillerson continued to promote the idea of dialogue with North Korea, till President Trump on Twitter said that was a waste of time. The Secretary of State, who had the rug pulled out from under him by the White House on numerous occasions throughout the year, was widely reported to have privately called President Trump a moron. He certainly didn't deny it when he went before the cameras.
This is what I don't understand about Washington. Again, you know, I'm not from this place. But the places I come from, we don't deal with that kind of petty nonsense.
And so the only denial of the moron remark came from his press secretary, Heather Nauert.
The secretary did not use that type of language to speak about the president of the United States.
But she is not widely considered the most credible person in Washington. While speculation about Rex Tillerson's survival in the president's inner circle was a popular parlor game throughout the year, there were several other players who followed him out of the White House revolving door first. That hapless press secretary, Sean Spicer.
This was the largest audience to ever witness an inauguration, period.
I always thought we'd miss him when he was gone. Gone to an unprecedented number of other top officials. And news of their departure kept breaking for some reason during Andrew Pierce's Friday night program.
We're going back to the Washington, actually, and Simon Marks, because there's even more news. What's happened?
We have learnt, Andrew, within the last 5 minutes that there is a bloodbath underway in the West Wing of the White House.
That particular bloodbath ended the White House career of Chief of Staff Reince Priebus. He was replaced by General John Kelly, who was tasked with bringing order to an utterly chaotic West Wing. And within hours, he had claimed another scalp. Who can forget Communications Director Anthony Scaramucci?
I can't believe this, Simon.
We won't have Anthony Scaramucci to kick around anymore, Clive, to be honest. We've barely had him to kick around.
How long
to
did
begin
he last?
With. It was only 10 days ago that news was announced of his ascendance to the role of Communications Director at the White House.
But what a 10 days it was, ending with a profanity-laden exchange with a reporter in which Mr. Scaramucci described his White House colleagues as paranoid schizophrenics and said that President Trump's chief strategist Stephen Bannon was, well, let's put it this way, self-aggrandizing. Of course, Mr. Bannon didn't last either. He was gone in August as General Kelly continued cleaning house. But the general had no luck controlling Donald Trump's Twitter habit, which got the president into more trouble with the prime minister.
The fact that we work together does not mean that we're afraid to say when we think the United States have got it wrong, and to be very clear with them. And I'm very clear that retweeting from Britain First was the wrong thing to do.
Mr. Trump would have none of it. He used Twitter to berate Theresa May by name and tell her to focus on fighting radical terrorism in Britain rather than criticising him. He had to react to two separate terror attacks on New York during his first year. In October, 8 people were killed when an Uzbek immigrant to the US slammed a rented truck into cyclists and pedestrians along a Hudson River bike path. And in December, a terrorist detonated a suicide vest in a New York bus terminal, miraculously killing no one. On both occasions, the president demanded action.
We need quick justice and we need strong justice. Much quicker and much stronger than we have right now. Because what we have right now is a joke and it's a laughingstock.
He vowed an immediate and fresh crackdown on immigration. But when it came to another violent attack in America, the president had less to say.
President Trump there acting really for the first time in his young presidency as the mourner-in-chief, the consoler-in-chief to the country after the horrific events of the last few hours. More than 50 dead, the deadliest incident of mass gun violence in modern American history.
There was no call for any kind of meaningful gun control after the Las Vegas attack in October, nor after 26 people were gunned down in a Baptist church in Texas just a few weeks later. Another event sparked a deeply controversial response from President Trump. A group of white supremacists and their supporters faced off with anti-fascist protesters in Charlottesville, Virginia. The white supremacists were there to demonstrate their support for Civil War statues and symbols that a growing number of local officials believe carry racist connotations. President Trump, reacting to the violence that left one anti-racist protester dead, ignored the advice of his aides and their prepared text, and instead said this.
I think there's blame on both sides, and I have no doubt about it, and you don't have any doubt about it either.
They showed up in Charlottesville.
Excuse me.
To protest.
Excuse me. They didn't put themselves down as you. And you had some very bad people in that group. But you also had people that were very fine people on both sides.
It took another 48 hours before, under intense public pressure, President Trump moved finally to distance himself from the racists who had descended on the Virginia University town.
We condemn in the strongest possible terms this egregious display of hatred, bigotry, and violence. It has no place in America.
The protests in Charlottesville were perhaps the most vivid demonstration that battle lines politically are now firmly drawn in the United States. Donald Trump remains a lightning rod. Americans either love him or loathe him. And the year ends with his approval rating having plummeted to just 32%, an unprecedentedly low number for any modern president in their first year. Democrats, picking themselves up very slowly from last year's presidential loss, are daring once again to dream after picking up a crucial U.S. Senate seat in Alabama, where the winning candidate was Doug Jones.
Alabama has been at a crossroads. We have been at crossroads in the past, and unfortunately, we have usually taken the wrong fork. Tonight, ladies and gentlemen, you took the right road.
Now, I said earlier that it all began with the inauguration, but of course, in reality, it began a few weeks earlier than that, with Donald Trump's election victory. So let's briefly relive that moment of radio infamy when Ian Dale and I finally realised our predictions had been wrong. That Donald had won it.
If you're waking up to LBC's election night coverage, you're waking up to the fact that Donald Trump looks as if he's about to achieve his fantasy dream. He is within a nose hair of the White House. Simon Marks in Washington, I could never have predicted I would say those words to you.
You and me both, Ian. Absolutely stunning. A political earthquake for the ages.
And if we were gobsmacked, so was one of our guests from our studio overlooking the White House on election night, veteran Washington journalist Mike Mosetig.
Mike Mosetig, it looks like he's done it.
Indeed. This is a shock of all time. Perhaps the greatest shock in the 230-year history of the American Republic. We're on a merry-go-round, and we have no idea where this is going to take us.
Well, that was then. This is now. Mike Mosetig, former foreign editor with the NewsHour on America's PBS television network, is with me in the studio. And Mike, 1 year on, how do you feel?
The merry-go-round is spinning even faster. All the authoritarian instincts that we talked about, he still demonstrates. The big question now for the United States and the rest of the world is to what extent is he going to act on them? And the decisive test is obviously in November last year. We didn't have a special prosecutor looking over his shoulder.
Mike Mosetig, the former foreign editor with the PBS NewsHour. You can follow him on Twitter at Mike Mosetig. That's one S and two T's. Coming up next, we're going to turn our attention to the Russia investigation, and we'll try to separate facts from, well, alternative facts. That's next on LBC.
This is LBC, leading Britain's conversation at Christmas.